Welcome. You're listening to MyTechnologyLawyer.com. This is your host, Scott Drawn, and we're streaming live from Ponte Vedra Beach this afternoon. Ponte Vedra Beach, headquarters for the PGA Tour. And I'm telling you what, we're having some of the finest weather on the planet right now, living up to our reputation as the Sunshine State. Headquarters for the PGA Tour also happens to be the home base for the My Technology Lawyer radio show studios. And let me tell you what, we have some great programming coming your way. If you're inclined, go over to mytechnologylawyer.com/radio and take a look at our program schedule. Look at the navigational menu in the upper left-hand corner and you'll see our program schedule. This morning, we had another installment of a new show we announced a few weeks back, Terrapin Live. Terrapin Live is a very interesting show. It's co-hosted by Princess Anne Laboutier, who is in Singapore. And Princess Anne is with Terrapin, and they are in the business of sponsoring all kinds of telecom events over in Southeast Asia. And they have one that is of particular note, Submarine Networks World 2006. It's not going to be until October, but we're interviewing various sponsors and participants in the show. And this morning we had Global Marine Systems and Australia Japan Cable on the line, and they were telling us all about the nuances of building out infrastructure and laying cable across the ocean floor in order to bring the world closer together in terms of its network. So it was a fabulous program. You can listen to that show. It's up in the archives. You can also listen live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. That show is really going fabulously, as is its companion program, Channel Partners Live, which was launched 2 weeks ago. And my co-host there is the very talented Kelly Henderson. She is located in Phoenix, Arizona, and she is also doing a fabulous job. They will be with me tomorrow at 4 o'clock Eastern for another installment of Channel Partners Live, and it's a great opportunity to learn how you can break in and penetrate the telecom industry, participate in the telecom industry. Things are beginning to turn around just a bit there. So tune into these programs and find out about it. You can sure call in. As you can call in today, Miss Julie is monitoring our board operations this afternoon. She's waiting for your call. You can dial in at 866-685-7469, and Miss Julie will screen your call, and then she'll put you through. We have a fabulous guest with us today, a returning performance from Dr. Andrew Kolarik, and he's going to talk with us about the status of cyber terrorism and his new book, Cyber Terrorism, Political and Economic Implications. You want to know what's happening in the world of cyber warfare? Well, we've got the expert on the line with us, and we will be right back to introduce him further and to talk about his thoughts about where we are in the world of cyber terrorism. This is your host, Scott Drawn. We will be right back. Don't go away. MyTechnologyLawyer.com/radio.
Every multi-million dollar business began with a good idea. Perhaps you have an idea for a new product, a new service, or an entirely new technology twist. How can you tell if your idea is the next home run? Contact Drawn Business Services. The Drawn team is the power behind MyTechnologyLawyer.com, the Internet's foremost resource for technology entrepreneurs. Our lawyers, accountants, and business analysts can help you evaluate the marketability of your business idea and give you the guidance you need to take it from dream to reality. Drawn Business Services' four-point analytical process can give you solid data on product development, marketing, finance, and the human resources necessary to bring your product to market. AOL, Microsoft, and the Internet all began as one person's vision. Let Drawn Business Services help you develop yours. Learn more by contacting Drawn Business Services on the web at MyTechnologyLawyer.com. Take the first step right now. Visit MyTechnologyLawyer.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to MyTechnologyLawyer.com. Call in toll-free, 866-685-7469, if you're interested in talking with Dr. Andrew Kolarik live. Or if you're not quite ready to be on the program with all of our listeners, but you still got a question or an issue, send me an email, radio@MyTechnologyLawyer.com. I monitor the emails as they come in on the program, You can also send that email if you're listening to an archive version of the show, and I'll be sure to send it on to Dr. Kolarik, whom I've gotten to know personally, and I'll bet you, he'll call you back personally and answer your question. Is that true, Andrew? Will you call him back?
Well, I'll definitely email him back.
Okay, all right, there you go. We'll see a personal response.
They are welcome to call me, too. Talk to anybody.
And the number for Dr. Kolarik is 330-220-8355. Welcome back. You're back on the show again.
Good to be here.
Yeah, last you were here about a year ago, I think it was. So we're glad to have you back. Give our audience, for those that weren't privy to your first show with us, give us a little bit of background on who you are exactly.
Well,
I know who you are, but tell them what you want them to know.
Oh, okay. Well, the base plate, so to speak. I'm this computer guy.
Yeah.
Have over 25 years using these systems. Started off, you know, doing mainframe programming and IBM DOS 1.0 and so forth.
Yeah.
And programming, system design, development, college-level instruction, teaching, corporate training, all kinds of stuff on that area.
Yeah.
I have a PhD in information system security. I also have my MBA.
That's an unusual area to have your PhD in. Information system security. Where did you do your PhD work?
I did my PhD work at the University of Auckland in New Zealand
under
the tutelage of some very, very premier experts who put me through my paces.
Yeah, yeah. What an exciting opportunity to do that in New Zealand.
It was a very intensive program, and I finished it up in a couple years, and now I came back to the States after September 11th, and I'm putting my skills to work.
Yeah, I see that. I see that you are.
I've published numerous security papers, four books. The latest is Cyber Terrorism, Political and Economic Implications through Idea Group Publishing.
Yes.
My second book with them. And I've got all kinds of other publications in the works. So I've been a little busy on the writing side. I'm also a information security consultant. I run my own business, helping people secure their information systems. I provide strategic planning, security policy, procedures, auditing, security awareness training, all that sort of stuff. I am also a researcher, I mean, thus the PhD. So I do technology research, state-of-the-art security processes, global patent searches. I'm also a inventor of both design and utility patents. You can find out more about me at my website, www.andrewkolarik.com.
Okay. All right. Well, you're a multi-talented guy.
Well, and I also do, you know, these kind of radio shows with you. I do all kinds of public awareness campaigns.
Yeah.
This cyber terrorism stuff is not a money-making venture for me.
Yeah.
This is a personal contribution to the war on terror. And I will talk to any group, anywhere, as long as they get me there, about these issues. In fact, I will be speaking in February at the Intelligence Summit in Washington, D.C., you know, and this is the who's who of counterterrorism experts. I'll be talking about securing the global information infrastructure from terrorists.
Well, thank God that you're out there. I've seen a number of your public appearances, and you are an excellent speaker. And if you're entertaining the possibility of having someone come and talk to your group about this area, you can do no better than to get on the line with Dr. Kolarik and talk with him a little bit and let him fashion a set of remarks for your group, because he's very articulate and someone who's very substantive, who really understands the cyber terrorist threat. So give him a call, because he is a great addition to your lineup and to your group. You've got this fourth book, and I remember that last year we did an interview, and this is when I first ran into Idea Group Publishing, which was sort of related in some ways to IRMA, the Information Resources Management Association. That's how I found you in the first place. Tell me about the differences between this publication and your agenda in putting it together and the one that we talked about last year.
Well, the previous book was or is Managerial Guide for Handling Cyber Terrorism and Information Warfare. And this book is more of a facility manager's guide. It's more geared towards the practitioner who's responsible for corporate assets, corporate systems, business continuity planning, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so it's more of a, you really need to manage your resources, protect your resources to keep your business operating. This book, I took a different approach to it. I viewed it from, how does this impact me, you, business, government, or even the world? I look at things from a economic perspective, a political perspective. I dwell into the core issues of terrorism's use of technology. And more importantly, I identify what I call the global information infrastructure, which is more than just the internet. By identifying what it is, you can then work towards protecting it.
And how would you identify what it is? What would you say succinctly? How would you encapsulate the notions?
Well, the primary underlying data communications infrastructure is composed of the public switch telephone network, so telephones.
Right.
Public switch data networks, which are for, you know, like high data transfers.
You bet.
Again, over public networks. In fact, there's been nearly 1 billion landlines installed in the last 10 years.
That's an incredible statistic, isn't it not?
I mean, what it says is communication is now more important than all these other infrastructures we've been dealing with. I mean, it's an astronomical amount of connectivity.
And the level of deployment continues apace.
Oh, yeah. In fact, yeah, it yeah. probably in the next 3 years we'll have doubled that.
Yeah, yeah. That's an incredible. And we're talking about landlines now. We're not even talking about the satellite radio wireless spectrum, right?
In fact, part of the global information infrastructure, besides these public switch networks, cable television networks, you know, there's over 163 million U.S. subscribers, and a large chunk of them are using the same cabling for internet access.
Now, what is that? That's about 60% of the U.S. population, is it not? There's about 200 million households,
yep.
Something like that, 250 million? Is that?
So, I mean, this is no small infrastructure.
Yeah.
Everybody is getting connected. You have wireless and cellular networks. Everybody, you know, ask your neighbor, ask the guy in front of you. You have a cell phone? Just about everybody has one. And now, those cell phones are internet capable.
Yeah, they are. The people in Japan are watching video clips and audio clips. It'll be just a short time. We'll be doing it too. I'm looking forward to the day when you're going to be able to listen to the My Technology Lawyer radio show on your cell phone without it being a long-distance telephone call. And I'm being told that that day's right around the corner, if not today.
It's coming.
We'll be right back to learn more about what is cyber terrorism. We'll be right back with Andrew Kolarik. MyTechnologyLawyer.com/radio.
The Recording Industry Association of America has begun to sue individual Americans. If you or someone in your household has ever shared an audio file on the internet, you could be in the RIAA's crosshairs right now. How can you protect yourself, and what legal recourse do you have if you are sued by the RIAA? Attorney Scott Drawn, an international authority on technology and the law, answers these and other key questions on his brand new CD program titled Protecting Your Rights, the RIAA versus America. This informative 2-CD package is crammed full of questions and answers, sample documents, web links, and Scott Dron's informative insights on the file-sharing issue. Protecting Your Rights, the RIAA versus America, is a must-have resource for every American who may be unknowingly exposed to the RIAA's legal onslaught. Order your copy right now at www.mytechnologylawyer.com, the Internet's foremost web resource for technology and the law. Don't wait until the RIAA knocks on your door. Visit www.mytechnologylawyer.com today.
Are you looking for a fun career? Do you enjoy working with animals? Would you like to be your own boss? Hi, I'm Mark Drawn, president of AquaZoo Pet Stores, and we may have just the right franchise for you. AquaZoo is one of the nation's leading independent pet stores. Some of the benefits to owning your own AquaZoo include strong profit potential in a stable industry, extensive training, little direct competition, a franchisor management team with over 30 years of combined experience, a unique concept in an underserved market niche. Oh, and by the way, did I mention strong profit potential? If you would like to learn more about this exciting opportunity, visit us on the web at aquazoopets.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to MyTechnologyLawyer.com, and we're listening to you. Call in toll-free, 866-685-7469, and you can talk to Dr. Kolarik about some of his work in the area of cyber terrorism, and you can get some additional insights into the book. Before this radio hour gets away from us too far, the book is called Cyber Terrorism, Political and Economic Implications. The author, of course, is Andrew M. Kolarik, whom we have on the radio hour with us right now. And you can get the book. It's published by Idea Group Publishing, another friend of MyTechnologyLawyer.com. We've done a number of interviews with those folks, and hats off to Amanda and her team over there. If I want to get the book, how can I get it, Andrew?
Well, you can go to my website. I have links provided on my homepage.
Okay.
www.andrewkolarik.com, or you can go to the Idea Group Publishing website and order it online there.
Okay, easy to get. It's a great read. It's very substantive. It's not real dense and difficult to get through. And that's one of the things I like about Dr. Kolarik's books, is I'm able to absorb them, and they're thought-provoking, and there's plenty there. Let's go to this issue about, is cyber terrorism real? What are people doing out there? Is it really the focus of the cyber of these terrorist groups? Clearly, they're using computers and mobile phones in order to advance their schemes. But are they really targeting infrastructures, information system infrastructures?
Well, let me use this as an example. A friend of mine sent me a book today, and the book is entitled 39 Ways to Serve and Participate in Jihad.
I just can't get over this.
And it's written in English. It was translated from Arabic. It is now in English. It is available on the Internet, widely distributed in a PDF form. On page 45 of this book, they discuss electronic jihad. But I want to read a quote from this.
Please.
And to whomever does not have knowledge regarding this art, then it is upon him to learn it with a sincere and good intention, as this is a form of attacking the enemy. Let us make jihad, even if it is by way of the Internet.
It just continues to baffle me now. I assume the enemy is the Western world organized or civilized society. Is that what we're getting at here?
Well, here's the real problem, is we have multiple kinds of terrorism and terrorist organizations.
Good point.
And they have different agendas.
Good point.
In the second chapter of my book, I don't discuss cyber terrorism. I discuss terrorism. I break down what they're using, how they're approaching things, and effectively, you have domestic terrorism. They use it to intimidate, create political strife, disrupt economic, prosperity. It's power struggle.
Yeah.
On a global level, you've got things like media empowerment. You know, we now live in a worldwide media.
Yeah.
So if I can get Fox News or CNN or Al Jazeera to show a clip of me beheading an American, I have just furthered my group's standing among all of these other subgroups. You also have minority solidarity, which is in many ways what this 39 ways to participate is alluding to. You have groups of maybe 2, 3, 5, 6 people scattered across the entire globe. Well, if you can bring all of these little groups together,
yeah,
educate them, train them, organize them, then you effectively have a virtual army. And the other thing is, if you have all of these individual groups with their own agendas, you can create confederations of those groups. So they work together, share resources, share intelligence, transfer skills between themselves, resources, manpower. And this is what the global information infrastructure is being used for. So I like to say over and over again, there is no cyber terrorism without terrorism, period.
Right, right. Is it a particularly effective way to accomplish your attack? And let me share a perspective with you now, because this perspective may be somewhat inaccurate. Obviously, September 11th was a dramatic event because it hit a high-profile target using a novel weapon. I mean, that whole thing, very dramatic. And there have been other equally dramatic targets, and many of the attempts have foiled. Others, the London bombings come to mind, have met with some limited success. Have there been any compromises of computer infrastructure that have had that same dramatic effect? My reaction is no, but maybe we haven't heard about them because the media hasn't picked them up, or maybe for whatever reason it's a government database and the government hasn't let out the word.
Well, there's several issues that go with that.
Yeah.
The first is some of my contacts in Homeland Security tell me that as soon as an incident occurs, they're classifying it.
So that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. We don't get word of a lot of these things.
Yeah.
Secondly, unless it's leaked.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the Pentagon's health system was penetrated about a month ago, and 14,000, I believe it's 14,000, records with social security numbers, partial credit card numbers, addresses, etc., were stolen.
Mm.
Now, this is the Department of Defense, and they have an incredibly hardened infrastructure.
Yeah.
So these incidences are occurring. How much of it is being disseminated is open for debate, discussion. There are other people out there who say cyber terrorism is a myth, and that's fine. They're welcome to their opinion. But the fact of the matter is, if you're committing terrorist acts using this infrastructure, and I don't mean just the standard communication coordination, talking to people,
yeah,
sending emails.
Yeah.
But I'm talking actively hacking into information systems, using that information, such as to steal an identity. That identity I might be able to get a passport from. That passport then could be my mobility ticket to get into a country that I would not normally be allowed. And then I could do something within there. So cyber terrorism is part of a support role in the overall strategy of terrorism. So it's very real.
Yeah. Well, that much is for sure. I mean, the internet and the infrastructure that goes with it empowers people. And, of course, the people can use it for terrorist acts or constructive acts or personal acts or business acts or whatever it is. And so clearly they're getting some leverage out of the deployment of the global information infrastructure. No question about that.
It's truly their new supply chain. It allows them access to knowledge, information in timely fashion, communications, all these things. But it also opens the door to eliminating distance barriers. And that is key to a mobile, whatever it is, whether it be a military or a terrorist organization.
Yeah.
So it truly adds to their logistics capability.
And is it your belief, observation, that the people who are involved with these terrorist groups have the computer infrastructure necessary to fully leverage it? I mean, before you answer that, let me give a perspective on this. You know, just to have a decent telephone system in the country, in some cases, is a real challenge. You know, the infrastructure is not everywhere, although it is becoming more common. So that being the case, is it your feeling that, yeah, these guys have access, and they have knowledge, and they have sophistication, and they do know how to do these things?
Well, let me put it in this term. Every major city in the world, whether it be in the Middle East, in the Pacific Rim, or in a westernized country, has internet capability available to the public in large scale. Also, you now have an orbiting satellite network for communication where you have satellite phones that are $1 a minute, fully internet capable. So wherever you are in the world, you have access to this stuff. Now, to address the issue of skills, every skill creates a foundation. When that skill is disseminated, it increases geometrically or exponentially. I'm not sure, but it increases. So the more these folks are running their websites, creating their news groups, doing encrypted telephony over the internet, on and on and on, their skill base is increasing.
Yeah.
As they learn to utilize hacking approaches into systems, that is then being disseminated. They learn, they grow, they get better at it, and they have directives to continue this.
Okay. We've got an idea of the threat. When we come back, we're going to learn more from Dr. Kolarek. We'll be right back. You're listening to mytechnologylawyer.com/radio. We'll be right back.
If you thought you had to pay top dollar to engage a best-in-class law firm, think again. Drawn Legal Services has taken the attorney-client relationship to an entirely new level. With Drawn On Demand. Compared with yesterday's conventional wisdom, Drawn On Demand is faster, more convenient, and much less expensive. For one low annual investment, you get access to the renowned Drawn Legal Team and our lightning-fast web-based resource library, designed especially for the technology entrepreneur. When you join Drawn On Demand, you have access to a growing network of over 2,500 subscribers around the world who can help you navigate your way to success. Drawn On Demand legal services cost just $2.95 per year. That's less than many attorneys charge for just 1 hour or consultation. Learn more about Drawn On Demand by visiting www.mytechnologylawyer.com. That's www.mytechnologylawyer.com.
If you are a retailer, especially a small independent, you know that the only way to compete with the big chains is to find a special niche and leverage technology in your business model. Problem is, finding the right technology for you is really tough when the only source of information is a salesman with an agenda. The Retail Technology Association is a nonprofit organization that can help. They have workshops and experts that you can consult with on any technology question or buy. This is information that will help you get the technology resources you really need. And the only agenda is helping you as a member. This is a nonprofit group run by retailers, not big hardware or software vendors out to sell you technology you can't leverage. So check it out. www.rtaus.org.
If you're an entrepreneur, you know that the biggest challenge facing any new business is finding investors who share your dream. Drawn Equity Sourcing can help. Despite the bursting of the dot-com bubble, there are still millions of dollars in investment capital available, and Drawn Equity Sourcing can help you find it. We'll connect you with the right resources to create a funding presentation that cuts through the clutter. And when you work with Drawn Equity Sourcing, you're taking advantage of our large network of technologists, business managers, lawyers, accountants, brokers, and other pros who have done it before and can do it again. Learn more about Drawn Equity Sourcing services at www.mytechnologylawyer.com, the web's foremost repository of information for technology entrepreneurs like you. Drawn Equity Sourcing Services, part of the Drawn Professional Association. www.mytechnologylawyer.com. That's www.mytechnologylawyer.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to MyTechnologyLawyer.com. Call in toll-free 866-685-7469 or send us an email, radio@MyTechnologyLawyer.com. We monitor those emails as we progress on the show, and we'll get your issue out on the program. Or if you're listening to an archive version, maybe it's an MP3 download, maybe it's a CD-ROM you got at one of the conferences, you can still use that email address. Be sure to be with us tomorrow at 4 o'clock. For another edition of Channel Partners Live, and also Thursday at 4 o'clock, we'll be talking to Ron Wax at the American Association of Micro Business, and he'll be talking with us about how small business and micro businesses can get at the conundrum of getting adequate health care coverage. It's a real problem for some of these smaller businesses, both in terms of recruiting as well as in providing the benefit to existing employees. So be sure to be with us at 4 o'clock on Thursday. Ron is an excellent feature segment, and he always brings some great answers to the table. We're talking today with Andrew Kolarik, Dr. Kolarik, who is the cyber terrorism expert. He's authored many books on the topic. He has a new one out now, Cyber Terrorism, Political and Economic Implications. This is well worth your time to spend with this book. This is a terrific text. It's easy to get through. It'll turn the light on for you in terms of understanding some of the dynamic and linking and understanding cyber terrorism as an extension of terrorism and making that link, which I think is a very important theme in the book. I want to go back to this conundrum, if you will, this tension between two initiatives. And whenever someone is talking about cyber terrorism, you have to listen very, very closely to the context of their remarks in order to pick up exactly what they're talking about. Because in my view of the world, there are two basic initiatives here. One is the leveraging of technology to implement your terrorist objectives and terrorist schemes. And in this context, the internet empowers everybody, including the terrorist who wants to leverage the infrastructure in order to deliver on their terrorist threats. And then, of course, there is the second aspect of the dynamic, which is to be disruptive to the infrastructure so that you undermine your enemy's ability to leverage the technology in order to either defend themselves or project their own goals and their own aims, in some cases law enforcement, in other cases basic infrastructure to society. Now, my question, Andrew, is obviously there are different groups, but isn't there a tension between wanting to disrupt the technology, disrupt the infrastructure, and yet being predisposed to using it? If I disrupt it, do I not also hurt myself because I limit my options?
Well, it's actually a wonderful paradox in that you can disrupt the enemy and still operate. These infrastructures have huge redundancy, alternate paths for processing the data and the communication. So if I take out one or two targets, the thousand that are left still facilitate my activity. So it allows for targeting, specific targeting, on certain systems.
Yeah.
So if I want to attack the White House, the rest of the internet will continue to operate.
Yeah. Yeah. The White House will be disrupted, but I will not be, because I'm not dependent on those systems in order to deploy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, with over 650 million Internet subscribers worldwide, that's a whole lot of fighter power in virtual space. Okay?
Yeah.
The attacks can come from anywhere, but also all these systems are sustained at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your sense? It's one thing to get out there and take advantage of the existing infrastructure, things like websites, data mining opportunities, email. It's another thing altogether to sort of build your own infrastructure. Take, for example, My Technology Lawyer. What we have basically done with that website is we have developed an infrastructure that allows people to go in and get documents and do a variety of other things. In other words, it's an interface between us and our clients, us and our radio listeners, and they rely on it to get certain things. So we've sort of developed it as an in-house system, if you will, an in-house infrastructure. To what extent, in your view, have these various groups, either together or separately in certain instances, been able to develop infrastructures of their own?
Well, they really don't create their own infrastructures. They might have web servers that they attach to somebody's internet service provider. They may utilize existing businesses, in other words, purchase space and capability,
yeah,
for their dissemination and video archive, so forth. But to the most part, they operate on the existing infrastructure.
I see.
And then utilize it to do the rest.
Yeah, yeah. They're like sort of gypsies, I guess, wherever the infrastructure is, and they can exploit it. They, in fact, do.
Well, this also allows them ease of movement. They don't have any assets to be confiscated.
Yeah.
So when they post something that they shouldn't have, and the authorities come to get them, there's nobody to get.
Yeah.
All they can do is shut down the site.
Yeah. But it does suggest also that as part of their agenda, there is no... You know, when we talk about power struggle, what comes to mind is the notion of getting control so that you can exercise leadership. And, of course, there are phases of that. First, you disrupt, you gain control, and then you begin to build your infrastructure in order to maintain your control. We hear a lot about the disruption. We hear a little bit about attempts to gain control, which is what appears to be happening, at least in part, in Iraq. But we don't hear about that latter part. Is it because, in fact, no group has been able to achieve that yet? Or is it because that's really not within their frame of reference? That is not the goal.
Well, let's go back a little bit into history with Nazi Germany. It was a democracy. Germany was one of the premier countries in the world. It was cosmopolitan, educated, well-versed, and a democracy turned into a dictatorship through terror. That terror network then legitimized itself, instituted itself even further, and change the entire society with all new control.
Yeah.
In Iraq, Saddam Hussein came to power through terror and then utilized terror to maintain control of that country for as long as he did.
I see. Those are two excellent examples of going through the full life cycle. Yeah. Okay, well, when we come back, we're going to get more insights, so don't go away. You're listening to MyTechnologyLawyer.com/radio. Don't go away.
If you're in the technology business, you know that finding the right legal firm can often be an exercise in futility. Now you can avoid this expensive time waster when you scan the Technology Law Firms database at www.mytechnologylawyer.com. Our database has over 170 forms and templates designed by Drawn Professional Association, one of the largest technology law practices in the state of Florida. Each form is carefully crafted with complete tutorials and instructions to help you create the right document for a variety of technology business situations. The form includes a free consultation with a Drawn Professional Association lawyer, and you can have a Drawn attorney review your draft at a fixed price using our contract review service. Creating a legal form has never been easier. With Drawn Professional Association, solutions to your legal issues are as close as your web browser. Visit www.mytechnologylawyer.com for more information. www.mytechnologylawyer.com.
Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Did you know that you can have all of your legal questions answered online by attorney Scott Drawn?
Really?
Yes, go to www.mytechnologylawyer and submit your questions, and Scott Drawn personally answers them 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, at no charge to you.
So I can send Scott an email about my question, and he will answer it?
Yes, send it to www.mytechnologylawyer.com.
That's great. I'm going to go do that right now.
That's www.mytechnologylawyer.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to MyTechnologyLawyer.com, and we're listening to you. Call in toll-free, 866-685-7469, or send that email, radio@MyTechnologyLawyer.com. And if they want to email you directly, Andrew, what email address would you prefer them to use?
Well, they can email on my website, www.andrewkalerick.com. I have a contact page with my email.
Okay.
Or you can email me at colarik@hotmail.com.
Okay. And while you're on the website, take a look at the Dr. Kalarik's new book, Cyberterrorism, Political and Economic Implications. It's a great reference point to have, and will help you build your perspective in understanding this notion of cyberterrorism as an extension of terrorism itself, and which I think is a real important concept, a foundation understanding for the book. We have all of this infrastructure. Sometimes we do not realize how pervasive it really is. Give us some sense as to the intricacies and the size of it.
Well, the global information infrastructure is one of those key underlying technologies that lets America be, or even Western societies, be competitive. You have multiple sectors. In the public and private utility sector, electric, gas, sanitary services was $222 billion, and that was 2001. Coal, oil, gas extraction, $120 billion.
Wow.
Global electric production exceeded 13.6 trillion kilowatt hours, and over 101 trillion cubic feet of gas. And those are 1998 numbers. So what you have is a huge infrastructure, and all of that infrastructure is supported with this information technology. You also have communication, which we talked about, residential, business, digital subscriber lines, cable, wireless, satellite. over $1 trillion in this infrastructure.
That's incredible.
You know, we placed something like 36 billion phone calls in a year. I mean, think about that. That's a lot.
How many people are on the planet? Is it like 3 to 5 billion people?
It's 6.5 billion or so. Now, I've never counted 6.5 billion people. But that's what they tell me.
Yeah, yeah, that's about 6 telephone calls per person on the planet.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you also have
seems
like
somewhat
banking
excessive.
And finance. You know, these folks really rely on information technology. The world's 10 largest banks had over $7.5 trillion in assets. The world's top 25 banks had $118 billion in profit. That was 2000. You have financial and insurance sectors, real estate, in $200 billion. World futures and options, almost $9 billion in 2004. 200 million new MasterCard and Visa accounts in 2000.
That's incredible.
And purchases reached over $2 trillion.
Wow.
All of this is electronic.
Yeah.
You have the transportation industry, $306 billion. Okay? Tons and tons of rail, line haul carriers, stations, track terminals, passengers, airports. You have 19,000 plus airports. We transported 476 million passengers. Now, have you ever tried to check in and the computer was down? You're not going anywhere.
Well, okay? That's true enough. Yeah.
And worse, if your name pops up on a do not travel list. Okay? You also have air cargo, which was 12.9 revenue ton miles domestically and 14.7 revenue ton miles internationally. Over 2 billion tons of cargo are shipped via marine. All of this is coordinated with IT. All of it. The medical sector. Healthcare expenditures were $1.6 trillion. Hospitals, medical practices, HMOs, pharmacies, insurance, all electronic. And the government, which, by the way, is approximately 20% of our gross domestic product in expenditures, everything they're doing is on a computer. Networked, coordinated, whatever. Whether it's obsolete or not is irrelevant.
Yeah. Well, now, let me ask a question about all of this, because this is just an overwhelming patchwork of hopefully integrated systems. Maybe they're not integrated, but there's multiple systems at play here. Talk to me a little bit about the tension between and the advantages and disadvantages in light of the cyber terrorist threat between centralization and decentralization. Yes, I have a lot of government operations that are on computer, but a lot of them are not centralized. Are we moving towards centralization, and does that increase the threat? You may have recalled the article by Larry Ellison some years ago that talked a little bit about building a centralized fortress mentality with your systems as a way to enhance security. What's your view of that? Okay, that's a very long-winded question. I'm going to give you an opportunity to give a long-winded answer when we come back. You're listening to MyTechnologyLawyer.com/radio. Don't go away. We want to hear what Dr. Clark has to say about this.
If you are a website developer, consider taking your client websites to the next level with live media. Working with the Technology Show Network, you can introduce your clients to the benefits and technologies of delivering live media to the desktops of their customers. This is a whole new level of outreach and surpasses commonplace telephone conferencing and webinars by introducing live content in an entertaining format. Using these technologies, your clients will be able to engage their customers and improve their online sales. To learn more, send for our free brochure on how you can introduce these techniques to your website customers. Send an email to radio@mytechnologylawyer.com.
My name is Cheryl Mead, and I am Executive Counsel for Drawn Attorneys at Law, a technology law firm located in the state of Florida with affiliates around the country. Your trademark is one of the most important assets you have. Yet, if your mark is challenged, you can wind up spending thousands of dollars defending it. Before you commit these resources, consider retaining Drawn to help you develop an effective trademark strategy. We have years of legal experience in trademark applications and opposition proceedings. We can help you develop the right strategy for selecting and defending your mark. If you would like to know more about trademarks and our qualifications, go to mytechnologylawyer.com. We provide free forms, videos, and tutorials that will help you select and defend your trademark. You can also call us at 904-285-2521 for a free consultation.
Welcome back. You're listening to MyTechnologyLawyer.com, and we're listening to you. We've got an email here from Mike Dobek, and I got to tell you, Dr. Clark, Mike is asking a question that I was afraid to ask. So let's go right to Mike's question, and then we'll come back to the centralization-decentralization dynamic. But Mike says, Dr. Clark mentioned the recent DOD Pentagon hack. That was of the medical records, was it not, Andrew?
Yeah.
And Mike wants to know, how well prepared does Dr. Clark feel the federal government is for a state-sponsored cyber attack against our nation's infrastructure to include electric, gas, and water systems? That's the first part of the question. And then the second part of the question is, what overall grade would you give the federal government for its preparedness?
Well, I'm probably going to get in a little trouble for this somehow. But first off, I think in a micro perspective, individual installations have their security practices and policies in place. Whether they're completely ready for attacks and so forth, that's open to dispute and debate.
Yeah.
There was a report card issued by the General Accounting Office, and they do this every year, reporting on their security precautions. And most of the government agencies got C's, D's, and F's. So I don't need to actually grade them, but I do need to point out that what we're doing, regardless of the technology, I think is the real issue. It's not the hardware and software and telecommunication systems that are as important, but it is the information that they are storing, collecting, processing that is. The breach in the Pentagon would not have gone anywhere if that information was not made available to lots of people. So my perspective on how prepared our government is that it has a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
And one of the things it needs to do is find the new Assistant Secretary for Homeland Security in charge of their cyber division so that he can start putting together initiatives that will help secure the government's infrastructure. Now, also to allude back to your original question before the break, let's refresh that. What was that question again?
Yeah, I went on and on and on, but the bottom line on this is centralization versus decentralization. You know, I'm struck, as I'm sure our listeners are, you went through this list of all of this volume of activity at airports and air cargo and medical systems, government systems, and all these systems are out there. Some of them talk to each other, some of them don't.
But let me address that issue in context of the government issue, since we're on that line.
Yeah.
We have a director of national intelligence now. His job is to basically be the focal point for all the intelligence that people are going to be gathering, collecting, and utilizing. So you have a massive centralization of our intelligence. All this information is going to be centralized. Now, while that is very good for putting it to use, it also creates a vulnerability.
You
because
bet.
Now it's all in one place.
You bet. You bet.
So my perspective is we need to compartmentalize all of these flows of information, report between the agencies in an aggregated manner, meaning only the top-level report, the top sheet. You don't need to report all the details to everybody. And use that as the basis for making these decisions. Then if there's any questions, you go back to the supplying agency and you drill down through the data.
Yeah, yeah. I think the way we have our data structured, housed, and disseminated is the key. No question. It seems like an overwhelming situation. Let's jump over to the question of what can we do? What can we do? Where are our solution sets? Awareness is obviously a key issue. The way we are designing and structuring our systems is another area that continues to be inspected and examined. Is there anything else?
Well, you know, I outlined 7 things to do in the book. And what I'm going to do is I want to talk about a couple of them. The first is information as a property right. Okay? Meaning my name, my birth date, my street address, my phone number, my various reporting numbers are my property. If I lend them out, you don't get to keep them for the next 20 years on your computer. I lend them to you for a one-time transaction or a one-time period of time. I own them.
I like that idea. I could lease it out if I wanted to.
Exactly. Now, if the marketing people might go crazy, but the fact of the matter is what's valuable is your information. And true compensation for its misuse, abuse, or theft derives from it being a right, a property right.
Right.
Now, one thing that will have to happen is we'll need a public debate as to the delineation between public and private information. What's public and what's not? What's not is mine. And I get to choose what I want to do. If I want to give it away, then I give it away. If I don't, I don't. The next thing that I think we need to do is re-examine all these software licensure agreements or even hardware licensure agreements. There are defects in these products that have been going on now for 10 years, and the manufacturers are not getting rid of them. And any known defects that are not being removed, what we need to do is we need to pass some kind of law or judicial ruling that says, if you're not going to build proper software based on known defects, then you lose your licensure right. The licensure agreement gets voided, and now it becomes public domain. And you want to see how quick these guys will re-engineer their products. And I'm not talking about new penetration. I'm talking long-established problems that just don't seem to go away. Another thing that I think we want to do is create an underwriter's laboratory for security products.
I like that idea.
Listen, we have electrical circuits that burn down houses when they're not built properly.
Yeah, I like that idea.
You heard how big our infrastructure is that we depend on. You're telling me that we're not burning down the country?
Okay, well, I think those are some pretty good ideas, some very practical solutions, and I can favor every single one of those. You are welcome back, sir, every time, anytime. We'll love to have you back again to talk more about this. If you've got a question you'd like me to forward to Dr. Kolarik, well, then send it on. Mike, thank you so much for your question, You've been listening to MyTechnologyLawyer.com. Be sure to be with us tomorrow, again at 4 o'clock, for the next edition of Channel Partners Live with my co-host, Callie Henderson, in Phoenix, Arizona. Until then, we appreciate our listeners, and we'll talk with you tomorrow.